Hafla. We're reminding the brothers and the sisters to please have all the youngsters in the babysitting room, inshallah. And that includes Muhammad, you too. That includes you. Inshallah, we don't want any kids in this room because it disturbs the sheikh as well as the live broadcast for those who are joining us live, inshallah ta'ala. So inshallah, if you have kids, please send them to the babysitting room. We have a sister dedicated to watching over the youngsters, inshallah ta'ala. Jazakumullah khair.
بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. ثم ما بعد to proceed. So we'll start with القواعد الفقهية and remember what we were doing last time. Remember where we are. I'm not gonna go over where we are like I did last time, but quickly. So we are in the first qaida, which is umur bi maqasidha. Matters are judged by their intentions. And we said under each qaida, we will go over the explanation of the qaida, the justification of the qaida, the proofs for the qaida, then some guidelines in applying the qaida, and then the branches and applications of the qaida. We are we're going over the umur bi maqasidha, and we're talking about the guidelines. And among the guidelines, we're talking about the conditions of the validity of the niyyah. And not last time, but the one before that, we talked about the positive conditions. And the positive conditions were what? Islam, aql, tamyiz, and al-ilm bil manway. So Islam, reason, or sanity, discernment, and knowledge of the intended. And then last time we started to talk about absence of nullifiers. Absence of nullifiers, things that will nullify your niyyah. And we said that there are seven nullifiers. And we started by shirk wa tashriq, shirk, ascribing partners, or devoting an act of worship to Allah and someone else, is certainly the worst. That is the worst. And that basically destroys all of our actions and makes them, not only not reward worthy, but blameworthy, and so on. And then we talked about the tashriq, and the tashriq is combining, mixing intentions. And so we started to talk about tashriq, and we talked about, ibadah and mubah, and ibadah and ostentation. And then we started to talk about ibadah and ibadah, when you mix two different ibadat. And we said that there are, under mixing two different ibadat, what would you expect in terms of the ibadat? Farida and farida, obligation plus obligation. Farida and sunnah, obligation plus sunnah. Sunnah and sunnah, sunnah plus sunnah. And we talked about farida plus farida last time, obligation plus obligation. And we said when you mix two obligations, it doesn't work. That's the default. But we said you could mix hajj and umrah. Both of them are obligations, at least in the Hanbali madhab, umrah is an obligation. You could mix, certain things like that would come together, like ghusl and wudu, for instance, because these are acts that are not intended for themselves. So there is always more room to mix acts that are not intended for themselves. And then we said that there are two other types that we will go over, which is to mix farida and sunnah, and to mix sunnah and sunnah. So today we will talk about combining an obligatory and recommended, combining an obligatory and recommended act. And we will talk about combining two recommended acts. So as for combining an obligatory act and a recommended act, So this would be broader in scope for certain, particularly if the recommended act is not intended for itself, for its own sake. It's intended as a means to another ibadah, as a means to another ibadah, or not intended for itself. It just needs to be done, just like tahiyyat al-masjid. Tahiyyat al-masjid is not intended for itself. It is basically when you walk into the masjid, you don't sit down until you pray. Well, if you walk into the masjid and they're praying Salat al-Jama'ah and you join them, that's it. You don't need to pray Tahiyyat al-Masjid in this case. And another example would be ghusl. You know, if you combine two types of ghusl, like someone who needs to remove major sexual impurity on Friday evening, someone who needs to remove a major sexual impurity on Friday morning, then instead of walking in, you know, taking like two showers, like you walk in and you walk out and you walk in, just to make two ghusl, so you combine the intention for Friday ghusl and your obligatory ghusl to remove the major ritual impurity. So here you're combining an obligatory and a recommended act. However, when you combine two acts intended for their own sake, that becomes a problematic. To give an example on two acts intended for their own sake, if you have leftover days from Ramadan, this is a question that the sisters always ask. You have leftover days from Ramadan, what are you going to do with the 6 days of Shawwal? Can you combine the niyya for making up the leftover days from Ramadan, or you know the days that you need to make up for from Ramadan, and the 6 days of Shawwal? In the Hanbali madhab, of course not. Now, and the days of the, you know, whichever days that people would try like to fast that are intended for themselves, can you combine makeup niyyah with specific days that should be fasted? No, you cannot. Is it mubah, makruh, or what is it in the madhab? In the madhab, it is mubah, and there are two different views in the madhab. So let us say you have the 10 days in the hijjah, or you have like days that are intended for themselves. Should you combine? We said that by agreement in the madhab, you're not the reward of both. Okay, but like, what if you say I would like to do my makeup during those days because they are blessed days? So I would like to make up my fasts during or on those days because they are blessed days. Is that okay in the madhab? There are two different views. One says mubah and one says makruh. One says permissible. You're not going to get the reward, but it's permissible. That's okay. The other one says makruh, disliked. Why it is disliked? Because you lose the opportunity of fasting on those days for, you know, this specific blessing, this specific blessing of fasting on these days. By doing your makeup fast on these days, you have lost an opportunity. That's why they say it's makruh. But the other view in the madhab is that it is permissible. It is permissible. Okay. So now, when you combine an obligation and a recommended act, they try to be kind to you, and they try to not invalidate your act. So they try to validate one of them for you. We said in the madhab, by default, when you combine two acts intended for their own sake, that doesn't work. Not intended for their own sake, it works. You know, like ghusl and wudu, and these things are not intended for their own sake. Tahiyat al-Masjid and things like that, not intended for their own sake. Okay, but what if you do combine two acts? What if you, for instance, go and make Hajj and make, combine, you know, obligatory Hajj with Sunnah Hajj? What if you combine them? They will actually validate the obligatory. Hanbalis and Shafi'is will validate the obligatory for you. Even if you don't intend the obligatory, they'll just force it on you. Like they don't want to invalidate your act. So if you go make Hajj for someone else, or you go make a non-obligatory Hajj, a Sunnah Hajj, and you haven't made your Farida Hajj, they will switch it for you to the obligatory. So they will say it will count for you as the obligatory Hajj, but you do not get the reward of the Sunnah Hajj, of course, because you can't do this type of combination. What if you give zakat and sadaqah? You could, like, you combine the intention, you give like $100, and you combine the intentions of zakat and sadaqah. They will validate the sadaqah, not the zakat. Here they reverse it. They're, because for the zakat, you do need to specify the intention to the obligatory zakat. Just remember this, because sometimes we can give our zakat in advance, and sometimes people, you can give your zakat in advance for 1 year. Okay, so people who always say, you know, but things come up, you know, if I give my zakat on the zakat due date, things come up throughout the year. Okay, give throughout the year from your next year's zakat, from the zakat that will be due on you on your zakat due date next year, not from the previous year, because you cannot delay the payment of your zakat. So give from next year's zakat. I don't know how much zakat will I owe at the end of next year. That is fine. Estimate and give and subtract this from your zakat next, you know, on the zakat due date, and pay the rest. If you paid more, that's okay. Allah will reward you. It's not a big deal. I mean, you lost $100. That's not a big deal. But you didn't lose it. It was not lost. Yes. Huh? It will, yes. Yes, it will reverse the sadaqah. It will reverse the sadaqah. So, it you know, so the default here would be sadaqah when you combine the zakat and the sadaqah, or you have like extra zakah money and so on. What if you combine in salah obligatory and sunnah? So you pray, okay, you pray the sunnah after Maghrib with Isha. Yeah, so you intend Isha and the two rak'ahs after Maghrib. Okay, they invalidate your entire salah. That doesn't work here. So they invalidate your entire salah. But mostly they try to validate something for you. Okay. Next is combining two recommended acts. Next is when you combine two recommended acts. And this is basically the, you know, tijarat al-ulama. This is the trade or the commerce or the business of ulama. And I will read this quote by Imam al-Qayyim rahimahullah, in which he says, the overlapping acts, and this is in the Da'wa Dawa, the overlapping of acts of worship within a single act of worship is a noble quest accessible only to those who are sincere, skillful in their pursuit of divine pleasure, well-versed in knowledge, and possess lofty aspirations. Through this, they achieve multiple acts of worship through a single act, and that is the grace of Allah, which He gives to whom He wills. Examples you may have for this? Tons of examples. When you combine, you know, sadaqah and sila, sadaqah, charity, with salat al-rahim, joining the kin. When you give your sadaqah to your relatives, that's combining two recommended acts. When you do umrah and intend also to seek knowledge, like I'm going for umrah and I will basically get an ijazah, or not necessarily an ijazah, but I will listen, I will attend some classes. These are two different acts that you're combining. When you combine, you know, different intentions in fasting, for instance, can you combine? Of course, you can combine different intention in fasting. So the day of Arafah falls on Monday, so you're intending to fast the day of Arafah and Monday. You combine different. There's so many things. When you recite the Quran and teach it at the same time. So when you're teaching the Quran and you bring to your heart the intention of reciting the Quran as well. So I'm not just sitting here teaching. I am also reciting. I am also getting the reward of recitation. And if you can get the reward of tadabbur, that would be excellent as well. So in general, you could combine different intentions when we're talking about recommended acts. So then the 18th maxim of Al-Qawa'id al-Rajabiyya, Ibn Rajab has like a book called Qawa'id ibn Rajab. It is a very important book, and in the Hanbali Madhab, this may be the most sort of Qawa'id-like book. Although, as we said before, it's not less valuable than Qawa'id book that are basically composed in the order of Qawa'id and address all of the major Qawa'id. It's an extremely valuable book, but it is not sort of the most suitable for teaching because it just mixes different, it doesn't cover all the Qawa'id and doesn't go by the order that is sort of expected, that's conventional in this particular discipline. And it it has many dawabit, things that are not, that cannot qualify as qawaid, but they qualify as dawabit. But it will be a book that we will talk about a lot, and we will try as much as we can throughout this course to cover the entire book as much as we can. So here there is a summary of the 18th maxim from Qawaid al-Rajabiyya, or the Qawaid of Ibn Rajab. And I'll read what he said. He gives a lot of examples, so we will take some of the examples, but I'll read the qaida itself. He said, إِذَا اجْتَمَعَتْ عِبَادَتَانِ مِنْ جِنْسٍ وَاحِدٍ فِي وَقْتٍ وَاحِدٍ لَيْسَتْ إِحْدَاهُمَا مَفْعُولَةً عَلَى وَجْهِ الْقَضَاءِ وَلَا عَلَى طَرِيقِ التَّبَعِيَّةِ لِلْأُخْرَى فِي الْوَقْتِ تَدَاخَلَتْ أَفْعَالُهُمَا وَاكْتُفِيَ فِيهِمَا بِفِعْلٍ وَاحِدٍ. So if two acts of worship of the same genus, coincide at the same time, neither of which is being performed as a makeup nor as a subordinate to the other in time, then their actions combine and one suffices for both. The principle, but we have two different types in this case. One of them, the first type, a single act achieves both acts of worship, and it is required to intend both together. So you have to intend both together to achieve both acts. And it is required to attend both together according to the riwayah al-mashhura, or the well-known position in the madhab or view in the madhab. So Let's take three examples here. Major and the minor ritual impurity can be removed by ghusl, by major ablution, ghusl. So if you have major and minor ritual impurity, like you use the bathroom and you have sexual impurity, so you need to make ghusl and wudu, right? To remove the minor and the major. Ghusl suffices. Ghusl suffices. So that's an example on an act, you know, that will achieve two acts if you intend both according to the well-known position for you in the madhab. Major purification or ghusl would suffice for both. When you combine Hajj and Umrah, and we have talked about this before, when you combine Hajj and Umrah, do you need to do anything more than the mufrid? Does the qarin who's doing both Hajj and Umrah combined need to do anything more than the mufrid who's doing Hajj alone? No. So in this case, you have done one act and gotten the reward of two. And then he talks about takbirat al-ihram and takbirat al-ruku'. Takbirat al-ihram and takbirat al-ruku'. When you're a latecomer, when you are masbuq, latecomer in the prayer, and you find them in ruku', and you join them, and you make one takbir. We said last time, it's preferable to make two takbirs. So try to get into the habit of making two takbirs. Allahu Akbar. And then you say another Allahu Akbar, and then you go down. But let's say there is not enough time, or let's say you haven't made two takbirs for some reason. Does one takbir suffice for two, for both takbirs? He will say here, it does. Does it in the madhab? Okay, so there is a difference of opinion, but what is the mu'tamad in the madhab, or the authorized view in the madhab? If you intend both, you invalidate both. If you intend the takbirat al-ihram, the other one is waived. There is a difference between the other one is waived, and that's the second type that we will talk about now. When one is waived, The prior examples, none was waived. You got the reward of the Hajj and Umrah, okay? Both major and minor ritual impurity have been removed. So nothing is waived. But this example, he put it here under this category, but that is not the authorized view in the madhab. If you intend takbirat al-ihram and takbirat al-ruku', both will be invalidated. If you intend takbirat al-ihram, Allahu Akbar, and you go down, takbirat al-ruku', the takbira for ruku' will fall off, drop, is waived. Do you have a question? No. No, we're done with the combining of recommended acts, and we're just summarizing the qa'ida al-rajabiyya includes both, includes just whatever actions that you combine together. So this is just a summary of al-qa'ida al-rajabiyya, yes? Yes. Takbirat al-ihram, exactly, yes. So then the second type is when one act of worship is achieved, the other is waived. Examples on this, you know, the very common example is tahiyat al-masjid. Tahiyat al-masjid is waived when you pray the farida or when you pray another sunnah. It's just that, like when you walk into the masjid, you don't sit down until you pray tahiyyat al-masjid. Okay, so when you hear two calls for sajda, sajda al-tilawa, the sajda of recitation, when you hear two ayat, each ayah, like two people reciting, They recite a verse of sujood al-tilawa, and they prostrate. Is one sufficient for you, or do you need to do both? Then he will say that one. He's given this as an example here of when you can combine and you achieve one and the other one drops, right? The madhhab is that you need to do both. However, there is a view in the madhhab that one will suffice and the other drops. You didn't achieve both by one act, but one suffices and the other drops. And he says that this can be derived from the madhhab because there is an opinion in the madhhab that when you have the sujood al-tilawa inside the prayer and you go down for sujood al-salah, that sujood al-salah will suffice. This is not the authorized view, and this is not the view of the majority. This is the Hanafi view. But we have a view in the madhab that is basically consistent with the Hanafi view. You're making your recitation and you come across sujood tilawa, sujood of recitation, and you are praying. Now, the majority will tell you, go down, prostrate, come back up, make ruku', go down to prostrate for the salah, the sujood of the salah. You could continue to recite, but you like if you want. If you don't want, you're going to do this. The Hanafis will say, if you are at the end of your recitation and you come across a sujood, tilawa, you know, sujood of tilawa, then just make ruku' and then make sujood, and that will suffice. You would have prostrated, because the idea here is when you hear a ver like a sajd tilawa, you want to prostrate. Okay, I am in prayer. I'm going to prostrate soon, so I will do it this way. But anyway, the point here that I want you to is that when they disagree over issues like this, just you don't need to be too, you know, enthusiastic about your personal choice, because even within the same madhab, you know, they can disagree. Within the Hanbali madhab, some of the ulama took the position of the majority. That's the authorized position in the Hanbali madhab anyway. And some of the ulama took that Hanafi position, which is not the authorized position in the madhab. But these are Hanbali, these are major Hanbali scholars that are disagreeing among themselves. So even in one madhab, and that's, you know, the fantasy that some people have that, you know, you have different usul and they're just like basically running on a track and they're bound to get to the same destination, and it's just like all fantasies. They disagree within the same madhab all the time among themselves. So just understand that this is the nature of these discussions. The nature of these discussions is that most of them are speculative in nature. We're talking about 99% of fiqhi discussions are speculative in nature. We're talking about more than 2 million issues in fiqh. You know, if you divide the fiqhi issues, you get to more than 2 million issues in fiqh. More than 2 million issues that are subject to discussion. 99% of them are speculative in nature. When they're not speculative in nature, they usually don't disagree. And it's not considered a madhhabi issue. Some people say it's not fiqh to begin with. So the obligation of the 5 daily prayers, they say that you cannot say that this is a Hanbali position. When you say there are 5 daily prayers and that's the Hanbali position, that's nonsense. What do you mean Hanbali position? So then also some people say that this is not fiqh to begin with. fiqh requires a little bit more than, but this is a valid disagreement. In my position, it is fiqh. You know, it's still fiqh. It's still knowledge of the rulings, and you know, it would qualify as fiqh. But that's not the fiqh that will sort out the faqih from the layperson. Everybody knows that. But everybody does know some fiqh. Everybody has some fiqh. Because you could have like a new Muslim who's a full-blown Muslim, because after you say la ilaha illallah, you're a full-blown Muslim. And they truly don't know that there are five obligatory daily. So they don't know this fiqh. So, but anyway, but some people go as far as saying that not fiqh because it doesn't require any special knowledge or skill. What are other examples? Tawaf of Umrah would suffice instead of the Tawaf of Qudum. When you arrive in Mecca, if you're making Umrah, your Tawaf al-Umrah would suffice in place of Tawaf al-Qudum or Tawaf of Arrival. Obligatory prayer after the Tawaf would suffice for the two rak'ahs of Tawaf. So if you make two rak'ahs, this is a little bit of controversy within the madhab, but this is the authorized view. So if you made Tawaf and you finished your Tawaf, and they start the jama'ah, and you pray the jama'ah, do you need to pray the two rak'ah after Tawaf, the sunnah al-Tawaf, or sunnah after Tawaf, the two rak'ah that you pray by Maqam Ibrahim? No, it drops. According to the stronger position in the madhab, Friday and Eid, if they coincide, in the madhab, now this is not the Hanafi or Maliki position, and it's the Shafi'i position if you live far away, the outskirts and stuff. But in the madhab, if Friday and Eid coincide, one will suffice for the other. What do we mean by one will suffice for the other? Can you pray the Friday prayer and it would suffice for the Eid? Yes. Do you know, in the madhab, the Friday prayer starts at the same time of Eid prayer. There is no difference between when it comes to the beginning of the time. The beginning of the time of Friday prayer is the beginning of the time of the Eid prayer in the madhab. So you could pray Friday, you could pray Jum'ah in the madhab at 7 in the morning. That's fine. If the sun rose already, you could pray your Jum'ah at 7 in the morning. Whether the Eid... if you have like an Eid sacrifice, Udhiyah, and Aqiqah, newborn sacrifice. So Eid sacrifice, newborn sacrifice. Can you? Yes. In the correct position in the madhab, you can. In fact, in a strong position in the madhab, either one of them would suffice for the other. Either one. If you intend aqiqah, it suffices for udhiyah. If you intend udhiyah, it suffices for aqiqah. And certainly expiations. Expiations will yet tatadakhal, they overlap. So they suffice for each other, and we'll talk about. Should we talk about expiations a little bit more here? Maybe. Okay. So let's talk about expiation and how they yatadakhal kafarat. How the kafarat tatadakhal. Okay. So you have kafara like for al-qatl, for instance, murder, mistaken killing, for instance. You have a kafara for zihar, when you say to your wife, you are to me like my mother. So zihar. You have a kafara for al-yameen, an-nazr, which is like al-yameen. It's the same category, an-nazr, yameen, oaths and vows. So you have kafarat for things like this. You have a kafara for, having intercourse during Ramadan, like ruining your fasting. So when do they yatadakhalun, overlap, they suffice for one another? And when do they not? And do we need to specify the sort of the cause of paying the kafara? You pay the kafara. You think that you need to emancipate a slave, or you need to fast 60 days, and you do it, or you need to feed, and you do it. You do it. But you do not specify for what. For what? Let us say there are different types here. So you have, for instance, when you have the same cause, and when you have causes of the same genus, and you have different genres, or different, you know, the plural of genus, genres. So, same cause. Let us get certain things out of the way. You make one yamin, I swear by God, you know, and I'm just doing this for teaching now, that I will not have lunch, and I will not wear my blue soap, and I will not talk to Hassan. Okay. Now, this is one yameen, but these are the three different mahluf alayh, or oaths, that you're combining in one yameen, but the utterance is one. One kafara will suffice by agreement in the madhab. One kafara will suffice. Okay. If you say, I swear by Allah, I will not have lunch today. I swear by Allah, I will not have lunch today. And then 15 minutes later, you say, I swear by Allah, I will not have lunch today. And then you have lunch. What is this? One kafara still by agreement in the madhab. Although you repeated the yameen three times, but you know the subject of the subject matter of this oath was one. So in this case, one kafara will suffice. If you say, I swear by Allah, I will not talk to Hassan, and I will not step foot in his house, and I will not accept any gifts from him. And no, you say, I swear by Allah, I will not talk to Hassan. I swear by Allah, I will not accept any gifts from him. I swear by Allah, I will not step, you know, foot in his house or something like this. Or, you know, whatever it is, that you just make three different oaths. Okay, do you need three kafarat or one kafara? One. That's why we say yatadakhalun. They overlap. They suffice for one another. What if you said this, and then you spoke to Hassan, paid the kafara, and then visited Hassan? Do you need to repay the kafara? Yes. Yes. They overlap and they suffice for one another if you pay the kafara after all of them. So you have not paid the kafara and you have violated all of them, and now you're paying the kafara, they suffice. One suffices for all. You violated one and paid kafara. You violated the second, you need to pay another kafara. You violate the third, you need to pay a third kafara. You only need to pay one kafara if you violate all of them and then pay the kafara. If you have violated all of them and then pay the kafara. If every time you pay the kafara and you do something else that would warrant a kafara, you need to pay a second kafara. But if you make all your violations, you're done with all of your violations and pay kafara, one kafara will suffice. Okay? Now, what about if they are from the same genus, but they are different, different causes in the same genus? Let's give the example of the har. Although it is hard to sort these out in the madhab, they choose certain things, you know, but sometimes you wonder what's the difference between this and that. Okay, so someone says someone has four wives. That happens, you know. Someone has four wives, and he says, you are to me like my mother. Okay? You know, kafarat al-zahar is a big deal. It's, you know, it's not. Okay. He needs one kafara for zihar. You know what's kafara to zihar? Atq raqaba, sawm, yeah, okay. So 60 days. So he needs one kafara or four? One. Because he said it in one utterance. You are, so this is one zihar. He says, Nadia, you are to me like my mother. You know, Fatma, you are to me like my mother, and so on and so forth. One or four? Four. These are four different utterances. Needs four kafarat for zihar. Okay. These are different. If he basically makes a zihar for each one of them, he will have to pay for kafarat. Now, what about zihar and mistaken killing? What about zihar and yameen? The overlap? No. Different genre. They don't overlap. But what if you pay the kafara, you owe two kafarat, you pay one and you don't specify for which of them? Suffices? Yes. In the madhab, specifying the intention here does not matter because the ibadah itself is one. It's the kafara. So they look at the ibadah itself, the kafara. They don't, when it comes to specifying the intention, they don't here consider the cause of the kafara. Because the wajib here is the kafara itself. And you intended to do the wajib, which is the kafara. Kafara for which one of them doesn't matter. You have done the kafara. Now it will suffice for which one. Yeah? So you had four different wives and you said kafara, you know, you paid kafara for the zihar. You did the zihar of all of them. And you didn't specify which one. Qura'a. You flipped a coin. That's how you determine which kafara has been paid. Qura. Okay. If you don't remember which one and you didn't intend, then huh? Killing and zihar. Yes. Or you could basically consider it sufficient for one of them, and you do the other one. As for ritual impurities requiring purification, if they result in the same requirement, they overlap by intention without issue. If a person intends one of them, the stronger view, all of them are lifted. As for ritual impurities requiring purification, if they result in the same requirement, they overlap by intention without issue. Okay. So, what are the nullifiers of wudu? Okay, so did several of them. And then you made wudu. Does this one wudu lift all of the impurities? Yes. If you intend what? If you intend the general lifting of impurities to basically make salah permissible for you, what if you intended one of them? You intended to remove the impurity that resulted from using the bathroom. You intended to lift this impurity. In the madhab, all impurities are removed. But there is another view in the madhab that's reported from Abu Bakr Abdul Aziz, Ulam al-Khalal, that one of them is lifted. One of them is lifted, not the other ones. And why is that? Because his understanding of لِكُلِّ مْرِئٍ مَا نَوَى, everyone will have what he had intended. Okay. So we talked enough about tadakhul. We talked not about overlapping of different actions. The next nullifier is التردد والشك, hesitation and doubt. Hesitation and doubt, التردد والشك. So we said we have 7 nullifiers of the intention. 1 shirk, 2 tashrik, 3 تردد والشك, hesitation and doubt. So I'll read this from Al-Mughni. He says, الإمام ابن قدامة رحمه الله إن المغني وإذا دخل في الصلاة بنية مترددة بين إتمامها وقطعها لم تصح لأن النية عزم جازم ومع التردد لا يحصل الجزم. If one enters into prayer with hesitation between completing it and breaking it, it's not valid because intention requires a decisive resolve, and with hesitation, decisiveness is not achieved. So, النية. So decisive resolve, you have to go into the prayer decisively resolving to finish the prayer, to do the prayer correctly and finish it. If your niyya is, if you're not sure, let me just get into it, and if I have to run, I will run. Or that doesn't work. Okay. So this is, clear by agreement in the madhab. What about the hesitation to cut, to interrupt, to disrupt, to stop, terminate the act? So the hesitation in breaking it. If one hesitates about breaking the prayer, the prevailing opinion, whenever he says the prevailing opinion, he's hinting to what? The presence of disagreement. The presence of disagreement. Because he wouldn't say the prevailing opinion if there is no disagreement. When he says al-riwayah al-mashhura, al-sahih, al-asah, etc., the difference between al-sahih and al-asah is that it's a hint when they say al-sahih such and such, sahih means the correct view. When he says al-asah such and such, al-asah means what? The more correct view. What's the difference between this and this? When he says al-mashhura, that's the popular view. It's still another word for al-mu'tamad, or the authorized. Sahih and al-asah, basically he's hinting to the strength of the variant position. He's hinting to the strength of the variant position. When he says sahih such and such, then the variant position is weak. When he says asah such and such, then the variant position is strong, but weaker than this one. It's, you know, this is just like when someone says that this is the correct view, the other one is not correct, it is weak, you know. And when he says asah, this is the more correct view, he's hinting that the other view is also strong. But this is the okay. So he says the prevailing opinion in the madhab is that it's akin to breaking it. When you hesitate, should I end the prayer? That's like breaking it. When you hesitate in terminating the prayer, that is like terminating the prayer. Because istidamatul azm al jazm, you know, the continuous resolve is a condition for its validity. Istidamat al-azm al-jazm. You like, you have this azm al-jazm, this resolve to finish the prayer has to be ongoing throughout the prayer. Once you interrupt this by hesitation, reluctance, your prayer is terminated. They consider you as if you had made taslim. That's it. Your prayer is terminated. That's different from the prayer. The prayer terminates, the voluntary fast is different from the prayer. But this is also a matter of disagreement, and we'll come to it. So hesitation in ending the prayer, so istidamat al-azm al-jazm is a condition for the prayer. Once you hesitate, it ends according to Al-Qadi, but not according to Ibn Hamid. And which one of them is the authorized view? Al-Qadi's view. It terminates. Ibn Hamid says, here is a difference between this man got into the prayer with complete resolve. What if this man got into the prayer with complete resolve to finish the prayer and to do it correctly? And now he got this hesitation. Should we invalidate the certainty that happened at the beginning of the prayer? Or should we say that this certainty is not overruled by hesitation? So Ibn Hamid says, no, his prayer will continue to be valid until the certainty is removed by certainty. And Al-Qadi says no, because the ongoing certainty is a condition in the validity of the prayer. Once the ongoing certainty is interrupted, then the prayer is invalid. Eventually Al-Qadi and this rationale, the need for ongoing certainty, would win. And that is the authorized position and the mother. Now, is there something about al-hajj al-umrah that will make them different from this? Yes, there is a difference for hajj and umrah. So for hajj and umrah, the hesitation to end the Hajj and Umrah would not end the Hajj and Umrah, because Hajj and Umrah are very hard to end. They have, even if you do a mahzur of Hajj and Umrah, there is a procedure to end your Hajj and Umrah. Simply hesitating is not going to end the Hajj and Umrah. And we will come to the details of we need to be done. So hesitation in the conditions, hesitation in fulfilling the conditions of an act of worship, or shak or doubt in fulfilling the conditions of an act of worship. Conditions means what? Shurut. The difference between conditions and pillars are what? Conditions and pillars are both needed for the validity of the act, but the conditions are not of the same essence of the act. They're prerequisites, but they are not part of the act. Pillars is called arkan, and your parts, your body parts are your arkan. So pillars are parts of the act, okay? Both of them are needed for the validity. So the prerequisites of salah, do you know what some of the prerequisites of salah? Entrance of time, the qibla, the, you know, purity, etc. So now, if you have doubts about fulfilling the conditions of an act of worship, hesitation in about fulfilling the conditions. So in the 68th maximum of Ibn Rajab, he says, the performance of acts of worship or contracts or others with doubt about the validity of their conditions is two types. What requires a decisive intention, it's not valid with such doubt unless the doubt is a predominant assumption. And what does not require a decisive intention, the corrective view is that it is valid. So we will take some examples here. So here he is doubt about fulfilling the conditions. Two types. In niyal jazima, or decisive intention needed. Decisive intention not needed. Okay, let's take some of the first type. A decisive intention is needed. So if you're not sure about the whether you wore the socks, like you started wiping on the socks in travel or residence, safar or hadar, and you wipe, how long do you have for safar? 3 days. For hadar, 1 day. You're not sure whether you start wiping in safar or hadar. You should limit it to 1 day. What if you did 2 days? And it turned out that you started in safar, so you were entitled to wiping for 2 or even 3 days. Is it valid? No, it's invalid, because you had to have, you should have had a decisive intention then, or the matter should have been cleared before you embarked on wiping for an extra day. You should be confident that you're entitled to it. If you were not confident that you're entitled to it, it will not be valid even if you were entitled to it. The same applies to someone who intends on the eve of the doubt, Laylat al-Shak, the eve of the day of doubt. The day of doubt is, you know, when, you know, so on the eve of the 30th of Ramadan, you're not sure if tomorrow is the eve of the 30th, not of Ramadan, of Sha'ban. You're not sure if tomorrow is Ramadan or not. You're not sure if tomorrow, you say to yourself, if tomorrow is Ramadan, it is my obligatory fast. If tomorrow is not Ramadan, it is a voluntary fast. So I am fasting. It's my obligatory fast if tomorrow is Ramadan. If it is not, it's voluntary. Okay. In the madhab, they say it's invalid, even if tomorrow ended up being Ramadan. So Al-Imam Taqiyuddin, Abu Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah, chose the variant view that it would be valid. He said, what can he do? Like, you know, he did his best. He said to himself, if tomorrow is Ramadan, I am fasting. If it is not, I am fasting. But it is voluntary. So he said that that he had done his best, so nothing else could be required of him, and it should be valid if tomorrow is Ramadan. It should be valid for him if tomorrow is Ramadan. The madhab, the view that's predominant in the madhab is that this reluctance is invalid because specifying the intention for Ramadan is required. This is different from the 30th day of Ramadan, when you're not sure if tomorrow is Eid or not, and you say to yourself, if tomorrow is Ramadan, I am fasting. Why is it different in the madhab? They would validate this. They would not validate, they would not validate it at the beginning of Ramadan. They would validate it at the end of Ramadan. So why is that? What's the difference? It's called istishab al-hal, istishab al-asl, presumption of continuity. So the assumption is the continuity of Ramadan. Therefore, it would be fine for you at the end of Ramadan, not in the beginning of Ramadan. Okay. So also, under this principle, if one made wudu with questionable water, and it turned out to be pure, is their wudu valid? No. Because that doubt about the fulfillment of conditions will hurt it here, and then the wudu is not valid. What are other cases? Doubting the entrance of the time of the prayer. Doubting the entrance. Now, doubting is different from predominant assumption, غَلَبَةُ الظَّنِّ. Because with the time of the prayer and the direction of the qibla and all of these things, we act upon غَلَبَةُ الظَّنِّ, assumption, the predominant assumption. But if you doubt the entrance of the time and the direction of the qibla, and you're acting on the basis of doubt, that doesn't, even if it turned out that the time started and you prayed to the right qibla, doesn't count. You need to repeat the salah, because at the time you started the prayer, you were not confident of fulfilling the conditions of the validity. If you shorten the prayer, doubting the permissibility of shortening, and it turns out that you were entitled to shortening the prayer, so you're not sure if you covered enough distance to shorten the prayer. You're not sure if your travel is tawil, because they make a difference between safar al-qasir and tawil. You're not sure that your travel is, sufficient, long enough to justify shortening the prayer. And you pray, and then you figure out that you are entitled. Your prayer is invalid. You need to repeat it. Because at the time you started, you were not confident that you fulfilled all the condition. Now, there are examples where decisive intention is not required. Two examples that we will give here. The first one is the wife of the missing. Wife of the missing. Now, the wife of the missing person, there's like a very long story about this. But nowadays, with all the sort of the ease of communications and stuff, the rulings would differ. This is one of the cases where تتغير الفتوى بتغير الأحوال والعوائد والظروف. So fatwa may change. But the wife of the missing used to have certain rulings. So let us say that she got married before, like let's say she needed to wait 4 years. And she got married before the end of the 4 years. And it turns out that the missing person had died before she got married, and her waiting period had ended before she got married. Marriage is valid or invalid? Two positions in the madhab. Validity is the stronger position. So here, she was not confident, she was not certain that it is permissible for her to marry. But since validation of marriage is something that Shara is keen on, then we would validate the marriage. Because it ended up, turned out that her husband had died and she had, her period had ended. Okay? Now, the second one is Raja'a. Raja'a is reinstatement of marriage. Translated as to take your wife back, return, revocation of divorce, reinstatement of marriage. So Raja'a, reinstatement of marriage. You need to have divorced your wife. What if you're not sure if you divorced her? What if you're not sure if your divorce is a valid divorce? That your divorce counted? Can you take her back, not sure of the condition of Raja'a? One of the conditions of Raja'a is she needs to be divorced. Can you take her back? Okay. So in the madhab, they said, yes, you can take her back even if you're not sure of if the divorce counts. And Ibn Rajab says this is the case where Shariq had Shariq adjudicated the case like this, and he decreed that he must divorce her first and then take her back to be certain that he divorced her. They made fun of Shariq. They included this in the book of Akhbar al-Hamqa al-Mughaffarin. You know, so the reports about the foolish and the idiots. But this is when your limited knowledge will make you sort of misunderstand, fail to comprehend the legalistic rationale of the person, or the positions, the different positions that you mock or ridicule. So Ibn Rajab was keen on pointing out that the person who made fun of him did not understand his legal basis. The legal basis for Shariq is, you know, in order for him to have Raja'a Sahiha, he needs to have divorced her. And since he's not sure that he divorced her, he needs to divorce her and then take her back. And they made it look, they ridiculed the disposition, and they made it look like someone who's not sure that his garment is impure. So so he soils it with impurity to purify it. And Ibn Rajab said they are different. They're not the same. They are different. Because if you're not sure that your garment is impure and you wash your garment, and there is nothing, then for certain, the garment is now pure. Okay, so they're different. Anyway, but in the madhab, if you're not sure about the talaq, you still could make raja'a. Now, so exceptions from nullification due to doubt and uncertainty. Exceptions from nullification due to doubt and uncertainty. One of them is if pure clothing is confused with impure or forbidden clothing. Pure clothing, you know, so you have six different garments. Six garments. Well, let's say four, just like four. Four garments. One of them, two of them are impure. Two of them are impure, but you're not sure which two. You're not sure which two. You've seen something drop on them, but then now everything's dry and you're not sure which two. And you need to pray. And there's not enough water to clean your garments and stuff. So what do you do? Okay. The number of impure plus one. This is the number of prayers you will do. You pray three times, each time in a different garment. Now, are you certain that you prayed once in a clean garment? Yes, you are. Okay. Someone may say, but I wore the impure garment. Doesn't it impurify my body? No, because it's dry. Dry on dry, the impurity is not, does not get transferred between dry and dry. Dry and dry, impurity does not, okay? All right. So here in this example, I am certain now that I prayed in a clean garment, but did any of the three prayers happen with certainty that you fulfilled the conditions? No. Every time you prayed, you were not certain that you fulfilled the conditions for this prayer. It's waived here, because that's the best you could do. Okay. So if tahur is mixed with tahir, tahur is mixed with tahir. And you need to... So you have this bucket here. And you have this bucket here. One of them is tahur, one of them is tahir. How could this happen? What do you mean? What do you mean by tahur? What's the difference between tahur and tahir? Tahur is superlative from tahir. Tahir is ism fa'al, tahur is sighat mubalgha, tahur is superlative from tahir. They use tahur to say pure and purifying. Pure and purifying. They use tahir to say pure only. Is tea pure? Can you make wudu with tea? It's not purifying. That's it. So you have one pure and purifying. You can't sort out which one is which. So in the there are two different positions in the madhab. One position is that you make wudu once from this, you make wudu once from this, and you're good. Pray. Because they're both pure, but one of them is purifying. So you're good. The position that is, the view that is stronger in the madhab is that you take one handful from this, and then you take one handful from this. Take one handful from this, take one handful from this. Keep doing this until you finish your wudu. Now, the extra work that you did will not harm the validity of your wudu. But with one wudu, you are confident that you washed with pure and purifying water, tahur. And there is no problem in the tahir. The tahir is not going to cause you impurity. It's tahir, it's pure. Okay. Another example is on the 30th of Ramadan, if you say, if tomorrow we did go over this, on the 30th of Ramadan, this is different from the 30th of Sha'ban, because here the presumption of continuity, Ramadan is still here. So in the 30th of Ramadan, you say to yourself, I'm fasting if it is still Ramadan tomorrow. They will say it's okay. And the last one is unspecified ihram. Unspecified ihram. Or unqualified ihram. Ihram. Okay. We did go over this last time. We said, or did we not? I think we did. If you say, if Zayd is muhrim, I am muhrim. If Zayd made ihram, I am muhrim. Is this valid? No, it's not. Because ihram cannot be conditional. It needs to be munajjaz. It needs to be immediately effective. If you say, if Zayd made ihram with tamattu', I am mutamatta', qiran, I am muqrin. So if you make the type of your ihram, not your ihram, the type of your ihram, contingent on the type of ihram that Zayd made, is this valid? Yes, it is valid. If you have hesitation about the type of ihram in general, and you make ihram, you don't, like, you are basically flying, and they're telling you, you know, the ihram, the time is here, just make your ihram, and so on and so forth. And you're stuck, you don't know anything about this stuff, and you don't know which type of ihram you should make. Or you don't know if your wife, who's at the other end of the plane, is making tamattu or qiran, and you just want to make the same ihram that she's making, or he's making, or something, and you just make ihram. Is that okay? Yes, it is okay if you make ihram. But you will not be rewarded for anything until you make an intention. You're like, you specify an intention. So you could make the ihram now, and then when you figure out which type of nusuk you will do, tamattu or qiran or ifrad, then specify your intention when the time is right for it.